Blog Talk Radio.
Hey guys, thanks for downloading this week's episode of Real Sports Talk Radio. Before we get started, I want to quickly tell you about our good friends over at ProWrestlingTees.com. ProWrestlingTees.com is the only marketplace for independent wrestlers and former WWE, WCW, ECW, TNA stars. They have their own merchandise there, shirts, hats, all you want. Go there. All the proceeds go to them. When they were wrestling for WWE, they made like 30 cents a shirt. This money goes directly to them. Show your support for your favorite stars on the independent scene or former WWE legends such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, CM Punk, Jake the Snake Roberts, such indie stars as Cliff Compton and Colt Cabana. Colt Cabana, which you'll hear tomorrow on Real Sports Talk Radio. Check it out, ProWrestlingTees.com. But for now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. So glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind that glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
All right, Real Sports Talk Radio on the air. Thanks for taking a few minutes to waste your time with me during your week. Thanks for downloading the show. We really appreciate it. Joining me is a good friend of ours, Ryan Stern. He'll be on with us in a few minutes. He'll be joining us to talk about everything about this fantasy football tirade, everything that's going on. Also, Tommy Dreamer, the king of hardcore. We're going to discuss the House of Hardcore shows this weekend out in Philadelphia and in New York. Check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can go to houseofhardcore.net for ticket information for the cards. Dean Malenko getting inducted into the Hardcore Hall of Fame at the Philadelphia ECW Arena. You don't want to miss it. A lot of good things going on in the world of sports. It is... It is the time where you've got to love it. As right now, we're trying to get... We're welcoming Tommy Dreamer to the program. Tommy, how are you tonight?
Good, guys. How you doing?
This is good, man. This is Randy Zellier, Ryan Stern. Sorry for the abruptness there. So, Tommy, you know, I was just telling everybody about the House of Hardcore shows this weekend in Philadelphia and in New York. Can you go into a little bit more detail about the shows?
Sure. First night, Friday night, House of Hardcore 10 at the world famous old school ECW Arena, now the 2300 Arena. All tickets are available on houseofhardcore.net, all the information. It's also, that show is available on iPay-Per-View, which you could also watch on the website. And the main event is myself and the Japanese buzzsaw Tajiri, who... kind of special for me to have him come to the arena that made him famous, and we'll be taking on Eric Young and Ethan Carter. We've got Bobby Roode versus Austin Aries, Chris Hero versus Lance Hoyt. They just both finished a really long tour of Japan. I got Colt Cabana, you name it, they're there. And then Saturday, House of Hardcore 11 at the Elm Corps Center in Corona, Queens, is the TNA World Tag Team Champions are the Wolves versus the Dirty Heels, Bobby Roode and Austin Aries. Myself will be taking on Ethan Carter in a New York City street fight. The homicidal, suicidal, genocidal Sabu will be taking on the Monster Abyss in a Monster's Ball match, which basically means it's going to be crazy. Thea Trinidad versus Jade from TNA with the lovely Velvet Sky will be the special referee. Forgot, go back Friday. Really cool, too. Dean Malenko is being inducted into the Hall of Fame at that building, and really to pay homage to his career. And it's, for me, my two favorite things are having Tajiri there, because I was with him in Japan about a month ago, and he was really humbled to say that, you know, his career started at the ECW Arena and he was a nobody. The fans accepted him and he went on to huge success, and he's a huge star in Japan, and he was, you know, moving on in life. He's actually, his career almost ended early due to an elbow issue. He could no longer move his arm, and he went to an acupuncturist and fixed his arm, extended his career, and he's actually been pursuing his doctorate in acupuncture. He's starting his own practice, and he's, to me, he said, you know, I probably will never be in Philadelphia in that building ever again, and or never will probably be in Queens any ever again. So it's really cool to kind of see him say, you know, full circle for his career, and for the fact that Dean Malenko, whose career pretty much started at that same place, to pay homage to his great career is really, really cool for me to do, not only as a friend, but, you know, for my promotion. Friday night, I forgot, we have the NXT call. I call him the NXT Cookie Monster. Rhino will be taking on the Monster Abyss in a very, very hard-hitting type of matchup. So, I mean, I kind of, you know, I think most of the wrestling fans know me. I'm a huge fan of wrestling, still am. Watch everything. I just want to give people an alternative, give people a mix so they can see all their, you know, a different alternative, basically my view of professional wrestling. And if anyone knows my mind, I'm crazy, and I want to show people my craziness.
You know, it's funny because the Philadelphia Arena, the original ECW Arena, how has it changed over the years from when you started there as a wrestler and through the years? Because, you know, when WWE revived the ECW brand, you guys went back there. I understand there was a little bit of a makeover on it. Is it the same feeling still, or did they change up the building a little bit?
I want to say the greatest compliment I was given was by Bubba, and compliments don't come his way, especially towards me. The last two shows we had there, he said, you recaptured that magic that we had. And I was never looking to reform ECW or bring it back. It's that was the past, this is the future, and I want to create new memories. And that fans, that ambiance, I don't care what you do to the actual building, and they just actually renovated again to fit more people, which is great for me because my last show, both two shows were sold out, and I had to actually turn people away, and they've expanded it even more to fit more people. And, you know, that ambiance will never go away. It's, you know, that crowd, they're wrestling fans. And to me, if you're a wrestling fan, there's only a few historic or must-see buildings that you have to go see professional wrestling in. And to me, that's the number one, you know, number two being Madison Square Garden. So it's kind of, you know, cool for me to also give back to the arena and the town that made me famous. And that's, you know, the old school ECW arena.
At one point, too, House of Hardcore was being focused on the Fight Network. Do you still have that working relationship with them?
I do. I have a great relationship with the Fight Network, and the TV shows they're still up there on Hulu as well. They came to me with just after eight shows and offered me a television deal, which was really, really cool. It helped with myself promoting my first show in Toronto, which was beyond my favorite show I've ever done. And the television really helped me. They want to do more. Unfortunately, I'm not a publicly traded company, and I don't have rich parents that helped me gain a company. So I have to keep on plugging away because production costs, all that stuff, that costs a lot of money. And, you know, unless they want to pay for a lot of programming, it's a hard, business-wise, it's hard. Television for professional wrestling costs so much money, and I need, you know, this is basically all my years of busting my butt in the ring, my life savings to try to, you know, continue. So far I've been blessed that you know, my shows have been doing really, really well, and you know, I want to continue, and I just kind of told them, you know, let's just wait, see where the wrestling business continues and see how my own business continues. Because a big mistake a lot of people make is they get on television or try to put their product on television, and they're out of business rapidly.
And it's funny you just said that, too, because I listened to when you did an interview, I think it was last year, with Steve Austin on his podcast, and you just said the minute you feel like you're losing money with this, you're going to stop. So obviously you're still promoting the shows. Can you talk about that risk factor of putting on these shows? Because like you just said, it's your money. It's not like it's anyone else's. What are some of the different risks, the risk-reward factor for you in this?
Well, again, I went through that with the original ECW. Running a wrestling company or running a weekly episodic television company, man, it costs so much money. I know for myself, my own budget, I know right now where my tickets stand for my both my shows. I have cleared my nut. So, and actually a little bit in the green. So that's good. And that's my pre-sales. I was very, very nervous all the time. You know, that's how and why I put together such big cards because, again, you know, this I have a wife, I have two children, and these are life savings, and you know, it is a risk. But I can't risk my kids' future, my own future, you know, hey, because daddy wants to go out there and play a pro wrestler. So that's kind of how I went about in doing this. And the fact that, you know, I wish right now, right before you guys called, I was doing hotels and got into an argument with the person where I'm like, hey, I need 5 hotel rooms for this night and I need 7 hotel rooms for the next night. You know, can you do me a solid? And here I am looking on the computer. It's like, hey, they're $80 a pop. And she's telling me, oh, $125 a night. And I said, ma'am, I could go online right now and purchase $80 and you're not going to either. And she's like, no, sorry, I can't do that. Again, or Tajiri's plane ticket, $800 to fly him in from Japan. Not only do I got to pay him and you got to put him up in a hotel, you start doing the math, you know, as much as you want to have these great super duper cards, it costs a lot of money. So you got to make sure your overhead is covered. And, you know, I also go out there and wrestle every weekend. And, you know, I see guys who get over budgeted and or they run these indie shows. And I'm like, there's no way I know what I make, and I know they're not making money. I don't, you know, again, just like any business, and this is a business, you don't want to go into business to go out of business and or to lose money. You want to try to make your money. So that's kind of my philosophy. Call me crazy. I like to make money in a business. And I know it's, or even weirder, make money in professional wrestling. Crazy concept.
Tommy, Ryan Stern here. You were saying that you are a fan of wrestling, first and foremost. Was there a particular match when you were, say, 11, 12 years old that made you just say, man, this is what I want to do when I grow up? Or do you have a favorite match that when you remember watching it, it sticks out in your mind?
I was hooked the very first time I saw wrestling from age 9, and it was Bob Backlund versus Bulldog Brower. And I so was enamored with this business. And then I actually went to see my first live event. Bob Backlund snubbed me for an autograph. I then hated Bob Backlund. And then, thank goodness, I saw a man called the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And I saw him. I can remember it. It was me. My dad took me. He was a teacher. We were on his, you know, spring break. And he took me to the Hollywood Sportatorium in Florida. It's no longer there. And I can envision it like it was yesterday. And it was Dusty Rhodes and Bugsy McGraw versus Dick Murdoch and Ivan Koloff. And the way the cigarette or cigar smoke of this auditorium hit. I remember I was sitting at the merchandise table looking to purchase my first wrestler 8x10 and memorabilia, and there was no ring music. It was just this ambiance, and I turned in the way the spotlight hit Dusty, and I remember there was like moths or mosquitoes going by, and Bugsy had a broom handle, and Dream had a garbage can, and when they came to the ring, and it was almost like slow motion, and it was, I had this connection right then and there with it, and you know, he came out, and I was like, that is my hero. As soon as the match ended, I watched standing there. As soon as the match ended, I turned around and I bought my first Dusty Rhodes picture, And I mean, that was kind of like this is what I have to do in my life. And, you know, from there, I was at WrestleMania 1. I was, when the NWA first came to the Meadowlands, I got to see Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat, see the Road Warriors live, see during the Hulk Hogan, you know, seeing him come out to Eye of the Tiger and Real American was just, you know, goosebumps, or Randy Savage. It was funny. I was telling people I took a girl for Valentine's Day to see Hulk Hogan versus Randy Savage in a lumberjack match. That was my Valentine's Day gift to her. But meanwhile, I was really for myself. And I mean, I was, and still am, but I mean, I took a girl to see No Holds Barred in the movie theater. Yeah, I did that. I don't know how and or why women liked me, you know. But again, wrestling has been my whole life, and you know, hey, it worked out because I met my wife in wrestling in ECW, as well as, you know, I have two beautiful children from there. So my whole life has been garnered for this, and I guess it was just an, you know, next evolution from doing everything in the original ECW and then to working behind the scenes in WWE and TNA and all that stuff.
Now, you mentioned that your hero was Dusty, and we unfortunately lost him not too long ago. Were you able to have any, I guess, professional encounters with him? And how hard was it to maintain that professionality if you did get to work with him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, one of the better parts about professional wrestling, and I've said this many, many times, Ben Roethlisberger can't throw a pass to Lynn Swann. Derek Jeter couldn't play with Mickey Mantle. In professional wrestling, you at times have the opportunity to wrestle and or tag with your heroes. And, you know, I get it a lot now as I'm 44 and wrestle on the indies, and people are like, man, after I wrestle, you were my guy, or I love DCW, and I love that. And that's kind of why I always want to give back. But for me, man, when Dusty came to ECW, I picked him up at the airport and was like, hello, sir, how are you? And Paul Heyman had a great relationship with him. And, you know, I went and grabbed his bag, and he's like, you're Tommy Dreamer. And I was like, you're a Dusty Rhodes, you know. So, and he worked with me in ECW. I got to tag with him. I worked for him in his own company. We forged a great friendship. I traveled with him. And then when I worked in the office, I got to, right across the hall from my desk was Dusty's office. And whenever I was bored, or I got to walk across the hall, because a lot of times he was on the road on Mondays, Tuesdays, and I got to go and hang out with him every day. And, you know, just listen to him, hang out with him. He was the man, and it's every, you know, I'm so happy he got to share his knowledge, and he loved everybody in NXT, and I'm so happy people got to experience what I got to experience on every single day, you know, because, you know, he helped people.
Your career has spanned, you know, a long, you know, time. I was listening. I'm like a sponge when it comes to pro wrestling. I think when I first met you, that's one of the first things I remember saying to you, is I like listening because I always feel you can listen to some of these interviews and learn so much. And listening to Paul Heyman talk about how you first came in, he didn't mean it derogatory. He said, you know, Tommy was like a pretty boy, and he had to sort of pay his dues in front of the ECW crowd. Do you think NXT is sort of that same type of atmosphere as far as the crowd reaction? Because when NXT came to Philly, correct me if I'm wrong, but you performed on that show in Philly, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is it the same type of mentality where these guys are paying their dues in front of these live crowds?
I believe so. I mean, it's definitely a great developmental system. I think a lot of guys are paying their dues, and you look at the guys who are stars are paying their dues on the indies when, you know, they do have NXT is definitely becoming the third brand for WWE, and though they're not on television, but, you know, a lot of it is all thrust for the WWE Network, and those people have to excel or get lost in the shuffle. There's a lot of super duper talented people. You look at half the people that got called up this, you know, year alone, they've done pretty well for themselves. And yes, it is a way for their, if you're a fan of them, to watch them on, you know, a smaller stage. I've yet to be to the Performance Center. That arena looks awesome. And again, they're full of wrestling fans, which is great. And the people, the characters are growing up in front of the wrestling fans. And, you know, WWE is also pushing them on the website. WWE is a great machine, and hopefully they keep out churning, you know, the next generation of stars. But, you know, that dues-paying process, yes, they all worked very, very hard to be where they're at. And, you know, they will continue to work hard to get where they're at.
Can you also talk about the first part of that was when you first started with ECW, paying dues in front of that Philadelphia crowd where, you know, the lashings with the kendo stick and just the different experiences. Can, you know, since you are going back there for House of Hardcore 10, what are some of your favorite memories about performing in Philadelphia?
Again, it was the early 90s, and I thought I had to be this certain type of prototypical babyface. And, you know, the funny thing, and I always give him credit for it, was Taz. Taz used to always try these new suplexes, all these crazy things. And, you know, the people respected my wrestling ability. They couldn't get over it. I was handsome. And I had a good body. Man, I wish that kid was still around. But, you know, it was Taz who went to Paulie and said, listen, this kid is tough. And, you know, then we came up with the whole caning angle. And once I showed my toughness, they were like, whoa, let's not judge a book by its cover. And then after the whole caning angle, really was once Raven came involved, where my career really took it to the next level. But, you know, I had to earn those people's respect because it was, you know, Philadelphia. And, you know, I cannot say the caning angle was one of my favorite moments because it hurt. But I proved to the people that I belonged here. And, you know, that's hard. It's hard for athletes to do that where, you know, guys got to show their toughness, their grit, especially in that, you know, in that city. And, so I was able to do that, and, you know, I think, you know, my defining moment, and, you know, Paul played it forever on the open, was after I pile drove Beulah, and then I went into the crowd, and I hit my pose. I went over the guardrail, and I never forget coming back, and Paul was just like, he's like, you made it, you're over. You will never not be over. And I was like, what is this maniac talking about? And he was like, they accepted you. And he was right, because they did. He was like, for the longest time, you wanted them to embrace you, and they finally opened their arms and embraced you back. And he's like, you just did it perfect. And I just did it, you know, feeling out the crowd. And, you know, I remember I was all bloody, and we're all chanting ECW, you know, together. And it was a really, really cool moment for my career. And again, the reason I guess I am the way I am, I used to walk through that curtain at the end, and I would have Paul Heyman helping me. I would have Terry Funk helping me. I would have Mick Foley helping me. I would have Kevin Sullivan helping me. I had four of these unbelievable minds helping me become Tommy Dreamer. And that's why I always am trying to help other people to become better. I use this analogy all the time. Clayton Kershaw, best pitcher in baseball. Clayton Kershaw makes the most money in baseball. Clayton Kershaw does not go out there and throw a perfect game every single game. He also doesn't throw a no-hitter every single game. So that means Clayton Kershaw does something wrong. Hey, guess what? Clayton Kershaw also loses games. That's why he has a pitching coach. That's why he has a manager. They all tell him, hey, why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? Blah, 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 to make him better. How do you make someone who's the highest paid athlete better? Just do. Same with like a LeBron James, Michael Jordan. That's why you have coaches. So I kind of look at stuff as a real sport and try to take it from those experiences.
And it's funny you just mentioned that because I'm on the House of Hardcore website and there's the Wrestling Academy. Can you tell me a little bit about the Wrestling Academy?
Sure. I started a wrestling school. Again, like to give back. That's how this whole show thing kind of started. And, I have some really, really good students. And, just go out there and kind of train guys how I was trained. And that's kind of how I never was someone who would yell at you for doing wrong and or beat somebody up for doing wrong. I was beat up and, I was stretched, but that helped me become a better athlete. And it was a different time, a different generation. I have a different philosophy of training people. And, that's kind of the way I do things. And again, it's to give back to the wrestling business because, there's a million wrestling schools out there. I don't know how many great trainers there are out there.
Now, you always hear about people say that this guy gets the wrestling business. If you had to pick one guy who just literally, he has it when it comes to the wrestling business, who do you think is the one that gets most?
Good question. Interesting question. There are a lot of guys who get it. Then there's a lot of guys who can't put past their own, I want to say, ego. Guys who get the wrestling business, most people won't give him the credit for it. Eric Young, he gets it. He understands it. There are a lot of guys who also want to make the wrestling business better. There's a lot of guys who get it. I can't really single out. I would say Eric Young because Eric will be, the type of guy, okay, put me in a stupid gimmick, but I'm going to still get it over. Make me your heavyweight champion. I will become the most serious heavyweight champion you can. Make me a crazy lunatic. Make me a heel. Make me a good guy, a bad guy. I will do that. Matt Hardy gets it. Hurricane, he's another person who gets it. And there's a lot of guys who get it, And as long as you could put yourself aside, there's, again, a lot of guys understand it, a lot of guys get it, but then you deal with your own persona or your own, I guess, I don't want to say self-worth, but, there comes a time in everyone's career when, hey, you're the older wrestler, you need to start giving back, and wins and losses don't really ever matter.
Tommy, we also know that you're a really big sports fan, too. When I saw you in Nutley a couple months back, we started talking a little bit of sports. Football-wise, a lot of stuff going on. I know you're very busy. I don't know if you really have the time to do fantasy football. Have you been following this story at all with DraftKings DraftKings and FanDuel? I don't know if you've been following this story about the New York State of New York has filed a cease and desist order against them. Have you been following this at all?
Yes.
Yeah. What is your opinion?
I'm a huge fantasy. Listen, I live a life of fantasy. I've been a fantasy wrestler my entire life. I love fantasy baseball. It's a part-time job. I love the way my wife's eyes roll when baseball season comes around and I'm constantly on my phone. This year I was in two leagues in baseball. I finished second and third place in each league. Fantasy football, I'm in five leagues. I'm currently in like first, second, and like third in all my leagues. But fantasy football is a lot easier than fantasy baseball. I just started this year doing dailies, you know, entering for money. I liked it. My opinion is the reason why the states are looking, because they're seeing that these people are getting rich and they want money. And that's the bottom line for most corporations. So the sports betting sites will probably have to, you know, fess up some money and tax it. And, you know, I think they should tax the people who win. To me, that's, you know, that's okay if you win. You know, the lotto does it same way. To say that it's, I know there's some people who say it's gambling. I know some people say it's luck of the draw. Some people say it's a skill. To me, it's a combination of both. But trust me, the government will quickly, and they have, you know, settle this issue. For the bottom line, there's money to be made. And whenever there's money, you will see lawmakers move forward than usual.
Any picks for this weekend as far as the Giants and the Patriots are concerned?
Well, if we're talking real life, or what are we talking, real life?
We're going to talk real life.
Okay. I don't know the spread. I do think it will be an interesting game. Unfortunately, there is no more Red Sox-Yankees rivalry, and I think the biggest rivalry is the Patriots and the Red Sox, I mean, and the Giants for, you know, we ended their undefeated season. I think this is going to be a hard game for the Patriots. I really do. And, you know, if the Giants do beat them, I think it's going to be become a bigger issue than normal. I know the Giants need some defense. They got Pierre Paul back, and I liked how they played him. But, you know, there's a lot of injuries, and the Patriots are a machine. And, you know, you also talk in fantasy, that's the only person I wanted this year was Tom Brady. I have him in two of my leagues, and I have been riding the Tom Brady Express with fantasy because he's been a fantasy darling.
And also, you know, big baseball fan. I know, you know, growing up with the New York Yankees, what your general feelings about the Yankees making the playoffs this year, one and out, and then the Mets making the World Series. Were you happy for Mets fans, or was it almost like the bitter Yankee fan? Damn those Mets.
No, I guess I'm a tweener. I'm actually more Mets than the Yankees. Growing up, again, 44 years old, I was around during the 77, 78 Yankees. My father was born in Brooklyn, and he was bred to hate the Yankees because he was a Dodger fan. And so my first autograph was Mets, and my first autograph was Manny Mota, followed up by Dusty Baker. They played the Dodgers, and, you know, I do love baseball. It's kind of my second favorite thing to watch outside of wrestling and then football. I've been to every stadium except for Arizona this year, and then my life mission is complete. I've been to every stadium, and I've also been to stadiums that aren't around. I was very, very fortunate. I went to a game this year in Japan. If you're a true baseball fan, you need to go see a game in Japan because it will change your perspective of baseball. It's like playoff baseball meets college football. It's the greatest experience ever if you just love the pure game of baseball. With the Yankees, I didn't think the Yankees would do anything this year, and I was happy they made the playoffs. The Mets were a great overachieving team, and, you know, they have amazing pitching. Everyone knows pitching wins baseball. They have a surplus of arms, and I was happy to see them get to where they were, and I hope it continues. I social media has changed the face of wrestling as well. It's changed the face of television. I tweeted something. I watched a television show, Loudmouths, which is correspond with the Mets, and they did a 2.5-minute segment on my tweet because I said the Mets should trade Harvey and get bats for him. You know, I did all the proper hashtagging and all that stuff, and, you know, And I do feel that the Mets should trade Matt Harvey. I don't think he is a New York guy, and I think once he decides or whenever his contract is up, he's going to go for the highest bidder and say goodbye to New York. So I say trade him now, and, you know, the Mets are going to need some bats. And I said actually the Red Sox and the Dodgers would be perfect suitors for a trade because both need arms.
And it's funny, so
now,
you just,
this is a discussion that we've had on the show before when it comes to stadiums, and now it's perfect to have someone who has been to so many stadiums. What is your favorite stadium for game experience and your favorite stadium for fan experience of the Major League Baseball teams?
Okay, I get asked this a lot. Emotional attachment, of course, Shea Stadium and the old Yankee Stadium, because that's where I went to the most amount of games with, you know, my dad or my family and all. It's the greatest experience I've ever been a part of, and I've been to All-Star games, I've been to World Series. We went, and it was my favorite stadium, and it's going to shock people, the old Metrodome. Took my wife, took my kids, and it was when the last weekend they were closing the Metrodome for good, and the Twins had to win every game to get into the playoffs. It was the second-to-last game. And when I tell you I've never experienced a crowd where, and I don't know if it was the dynamics of the building on a ball, it was like Game 7 home run Joe Carter on a base hit. It was the greatest experience I've ever been to in a baseball game. And it was just this unbelievable, you have to be there type of moment. There's a lot of parks that offer so many different things. One of my favorite parks is San Francisco. It's so cool to be there. I walk around the stadium. I get every nook and cranny that I can. I try to go to the game early. I walk around the entire stadium first, then I walk the interior of the stadium. Kansas City, I was there 5 years ago. I had an entire section to myself. And then this year I actually went to two games in Kansas City, and I had to get standing room only tickets for the second game. The first game I got some sweet seats, but they really, really expanded that park. It's beautiful, and they have great, great baseball fans. I want to say my least favorite was Oakland Stadium. I felt it was just so far away from the foul lounge. I didn't really enjoy it. And Texas, because I went in August and I literally had to purchase a new shirt after one inning because it was stuck to my body. And when you walked out, it was like I was inhaling a butane lighter. I could not believe people were playing on that. It was cheap, the tickets. They were real cheap. But I lasted three innings, and I said, I physically cannot sit here anymore. I can't. I had to wear a hat to cover my bald spot. I kept on drinking water. I was done. I couldn't take it. Maybe it would be a different experience later, but no, I couldn't deal with it.
I just want to quickly follow up, and I'm just like you. I have a father from Brooklyn, and when the Dodgers moved out to Los Angeles in 57, my father and his family moved from Brooklyn to New Jersey because there was no need for them to be in Brooklyn anymore. So I was brought up a Mets fan, and I was actually at Game 5 of the World Series when the Royals beat the Mets. But when Granderson hit that home run, to lead off, I'm sitting there and I'm like, wait a sec. I grew up at Shea Stadium. If this was Shea Stadium, I'm sitting in the upper deck and the upper deck is bouncing. And they're just as electric as the crowd seemed. It was not a Shea Stadium crowd where I've experienced so many big games in my life.
Yeah. It's just Citi Field is beautiful. Shea Stadium was, I don't want to say it was a dump, but it was our dump. And people who
Absolutely.
Have been there understand that. When it first came out, you know, Howard Finkel's the diehard Met. He's had season tickets for years. And, you know, I was fortunate to play on Shea Stadium after 9/11, and I got to go in the dugouts, and I had my own locker, and I'm walking around, and, you know, there was a dripping pipe, and I was like, this is Shea Stadium, you know? And I've thrown out first pitches. I've been in, you know, Chicago, Miami, Marlins, Toronto. I've wrestled in, you know, a lot of these stadiums too. And it was just, but again, it was our place. And yes, you had the diehards, and yes, it was always, you know, we were the underdogs, you know. It's a different ambiance, you know. But again, I was fortunate enough to also wrestle this year on Citi Field, and it was funny. I was wrestling Wes Briscoe, and we went outside, and I said, "Suplex me." He's like, "What?" And I was like, "Suplex me." So he suplexes me, and then they all, you know, I come in the back, and I was like, "Man, you went crazy, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, "Why did you get suplexed on the floor?" And I was like, because no one else could ever say they got suplexed in Citi Field. I know David Wright's not taking that bump. But I do things like that because I'm crazy. So,
Tommy, can we talk you into coming out to a Giants game with us?
I would love to. You know, it's funny. My father and my uncle, who are both passed away, have season tickets. They still get season tickets. They come to my mom's house, and, you know, we give them away, but they had season tickets forever. I mean, they were at, the Ice Bowl. They had season, at one point, Rangers, Knicks, and Giants. I would love to go to a Giants game. I haven't been there, and I haven't been to the new stadium. I went to a few old ones. I passed on the Super Bowl because I didn't want to be cold. Kind of regret that because it was warm out. But I would love to go to a game one day.
Awesome. Yeah, I think, right, what do you think? We can make that happen, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll definitely make that happen. We'll go over the text details. So House of Hardcore 10, Friday night in Philadelphia, House of Hardcore 11, Corona, New York, on Saturday night. Tommy, thanks for giving us some time tonight. Really appreciate it. You and I will definitely be in touch, and best of luck this weekend. And then we're going to set this Giant game up. You just have to let me know if you want Carolina, Jets, or Eagles. I have a feeling maybe Eagles might be the best. I think the Eagles might be the best game for you, honestly.
I would just have to split my body in half. But cool, man. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Tommy.
See ya.
All right, so that was Tommy Dreamer. We just lost Ryan by mistake, so hopefully Ryan will call back in. Yeah, that was awesome. It was a lot of fun. Tommy's a great dude, and I would love to see go out and support him. House of Hardcore, House of Hardcore 10, House of Hardcore 11. We'll definitely be able to give you guys all the information, houseofhardcore.com. Really appreciated Tommy coming on. So we're wrapping up here. Thanks for downloading this week's show. We lost Ryan. Hopefully we'll call back. There he is. Lost you, so we got 90 seconds left. Ryan, thanks for coming on and joining us. I hope this was fun. He's awesome, isn't he? It's a great interview.
Yeah, he's a real cool dude who's really experienced everything. And my favorite part was listening to him talk about Dusty Rhodes and the fact that he went from idolizing him as a youngster to being able to work with him and hang out with him. And you could really hear the love that he had for Dusty in his voice.
Yeah, and what I think was really, really cool was the best part was, you know, like he made a very, very, very good point. It's not every day you get to work with your heroes growing up. And that, to me, was like the awesome part. Ryan, you're back on Tuesday night, I'm assuming?
Yes, we will be back with a new episode of Beyond the Bench. On Tuesday, we will be talking with John Laub of footballdiehards.com, and we're going to be talking about a little playoff push for your fantasy team, and also we'll delve into this whole daily fantasy mess in New York. It's funny because John's in Connecticut, I'm in New Jersey, so we're surrounding the big issue with New York, but we're going to have some great insight into that.
Awesome. Guys, I'm back tomorrow night with Thana, host of Art of Wrestling. He's wrestling on Tommy's show. He's been an interview that I've been wanting for a long time. So tomorrow, dropping tomorrow night, will be Colt Cabana talking with me on Real Sports Talk Radio. For Ryan Stern, I'm Randy Zellia. We will see you next week.